Good afternoon, good evening, good moment, everyone, whatever the time zone might be where you are. And if the audio is okay, would you give me a thumbs up, please? You can hear me okay? Great. Fantastic. Thank you. So, as we continue to settle in together today, in the first full day of our practice together with metta and wisdom, I'd like to offer some reflections that I hope will be supportive in our practice. And in our practice, of course, I include myself. I'm practicing with you. I continue to explore. I continue to learn with all of us. We're never done, never done. Beginner's mind. So much more development to still do and explore. So what I'd like to reflect on this moment is why metta? Why metta? So mostly I will talk about why of metta and some of why of metta and wisdom together as we framed the topic. I'll also talk a little bit about how. So basically the important questions. Why, how, and what. So I'll talk about why, a little bit of how, and a little bit of what. That's the agenda for this talk. So I'd like to start with the why, because that's the first question we need to ask with any endeavor, anything you do in life, is why am I doing this? Why? So I can offer some whys, but I want to turn the why first of all to you internally. Why are you here? Why? There are so many different things you could be doing during this week of your life. And why are you taking up this practice? And many of you have reflected as I was reading your questionnaires. Thank you for filling them out. And many of you have reflected both yesterday and today in the practice meetings. The clarification of your intention, so important, so important. So let's take another moment, actually. I want to invite all of us to close our eyes and just drop in for a moment. And dropping in the question. And drop in the question into your body as if you're dropping a pebble in a pond. Not into your head, but into your body. Why? Why am I doing this? Why? Why am I here? Let it be dropped into your heart. Let it resonate. Bowing deeply to whatever came up from your heart trembling, your heart quivering as it was asked this question. Why? Why are you here? Why am I here? Why this? As you bow, what came up, opening your eyes, coming back to togetherness. And remember what came up. Remember this intention. Remember as this intention can support us through life, through this practice. And I'll share with you, actually, I felt a little surprised in this moment as I dropped it in for myself and dropped it into my heart. And I felt a little teary and the sense of tenderness. I think that the answer that came up is because this is so important. It's the most important thing I could be doing, cultivating and supporting this cultivation of love. It matters so much. It matters the most. When everything drops away, when everything drops away, when people are on their deathbed, as I've had the privilege to support some loved ones who've been close to death or dying, that's what matters the most. How well have we loved? And the relationships. Quality of love. It is said no one thinks on their deathbed, I wish I had worked more or this or that or written more books. It's really when everything drops away, when everything drops away. And really feeling into our impermanence. Is a way to really bring to our the forefront of our mind, everything dropping away as we know it, conventional reality as we know it. So why metta? So many reasons. And I seem to have jumped into the deep end. At the beginning of the talk, which is fine. It's maybe starting with what is most important. And I will get back to this point. So, why metta? So it is said that the practice of metta was first taught by the Buddha to the monks. There's an origin story, and similar to many origin stories, who knows if it's actually that's the way it happened, but it's a sweet story that actually teaches us a lot. So many of you have heard this origin story, and there are different versions of it. Great. Bundle up, get ready for a story. If those of you who have a blanket, I'm going to tell you a little story now. This is sweet. I'll see many of you with blankets. It warms my heart. I have a little bit of a kind of blankety thing here too going on myself. So, okay. So here is a bedtime origin story. So it is said that a group of monks were sent to a forest to practice. And there were tree spirits in that forest who didn't like the monks disturbing them. So they made ghoulish sounds and scary visions and smells. And they scared the monks away. And the monks were appropriately terrified. They fled the forest, and they came back to the Buddha saying, please, please send us to any forest but that forest. They begged to be sent somewhere else. And this version of the story says that the Buddha said, I'm going to send you back to the very same forest. He had a sense of humor. I'll send you back to this very same forest, but this time I'll give you the only protection you're going to need. And they gave them, he gave them the first teaching of metta and encouraged the monks to recite the phrases and practice metta for the tree spirits. So the monks went back to the forest. They practiced diligently. And the story says they diligently practiced for the tree spirits. I have a sense they practice both for themselves and for the tree spirits, because really metta is an antidote to fear, is as the punchline of the story. But anyway, continuing with the story, so yes, they practice diligently, and after a while the tree spirits, they decide that actually they quite like the monks. They liked them practicing this metta, this loving kindness, and instead of scaring them away, they protected them and supported them. And like a good fable, they lived happily ever after together in the forest. And all the monks became enlightened at the end of the rainy season. Ah, sweet story. So I think of that story, and I've thought of that story so many times. Metta as a protection. Metta as a protection. Some of you have mentioned difficult emotions coming up, fear arising, other challenging emotions arising. Metta as a protection to create safety. So here, of course, there's embodiment with the tree spirits, but metta as a protection. As we practice for ourselves and for others, there's a sense of safety that's offered to our heart, to ourselves. Our hearts can relax, our minds can relax. And maybe, just maybe, in the story, you know, whether you know the tree spirits are real or imagined, a lot of times our fears are imagined. Sometimes they're real, sometimes, most of the times, fears are imagined. You can check in for yourself how many times the things you actually feared in your life came true. So sense of fear as this sense of this practice as a protection we offer ourselves. And also to others, we make ourselves safe. We make ourselves safe. We offer safety to others through this practice. So many ways we can offer safety. As yesterday evening, we talked about taking the precepts as another way to offer ourselves safety and offer others safety. Offering safety also through goodwill, through friendliness. So metta, translated as loving kindness, as love, friendliness, care, goodwill, warmth, benevolence, so many different nuances of this term. And at different moments of your practice, the different nuances might feel more alive for you or more appropriate for you. For example, if you're walking down the street, when you do walking meditation and you go for a walking meditation, and let's say you're doing an extended, kind of an open walking meditation, and you're walking, you're looking around, and you see a neighbor walking by, oh, you smile, and in your heart, you're wishing them, may you be safe, may you be well, may you be happy. It shows up as goodwill, as benevolence. That just smiling or the passerby smiling at you, even establishing eye contact, that's an expression of metta. That's an expression of metta, simply that. Or turning your attention, as Bhante was inviting us this morning, towards the body, really meeting the body with care, with loving attention, loving awareness. That is metta too. So many different ways metta can be expressed externally, internally, relationally, universally. So so many different nuances. It's not just one thing. So many different nuances and flavors of it. So back to the theme of why, the suttas offer some whys. So there are mundane reasons, mundane and super mundane, convention, or rather, let's say in Kohlberg's hierarchy of moral development, in more modern psychological language, there's the pre-conventional, purpose-driven reasons to cultivate metta, and then there are post-conventional reasons, universe according to the universal principles. So I'll talk a little bit about both the pre-conventional or purpose-driven, what good actually it gives us, it provides for us as we cultivate these practices, and the post-conventional, these universal principles, which I kind of started to dive into at the beginning by asking you to check in and really with bringing mindfulness of death a little bit, Maranasati, into our awareness, into the field. So some of the mundane reasons in Anguttara Nikaya 11.1, 11.16, the Buddha talks about 11 benefits of metta. And many of you might have heard this, whether you have or you haven't. Here we go. They're always a lovely reminder of the benefits of this practice. So, number one, you will sleep easily. Yay. That's an important one. Knowing how important sleep is to our well-being. Plenty of research these days about the importance of sleep. Really the basis for everything. Number two, I feel like, what was it? David Letterman had a top 10 list. You know, I feel like, okay, I should have gone backwards, but here we are. We'll go through them in order. Number two, you will wake easily. Ah, that's a nice one, actually. That's an interesting one. We usually don't pay attention to how we wake up. But I wonder if during this retreat, you can pay attention, not just to how you fall asleep, but also how you wake up. Let there be awareness. Notice how you wake up, how that might be different. Benefit number three, you will have pleasant dreams. Ah, that's nice. Number four, and of course, I mean, that makes sense too, right? Because if your heart is imbued in kindness towards yourself and others, there is a sense of happiness and joy that arises. So dreams tend to be more pleasant. I remember years ago I read this book by Barbara Kingsolver called Animal Dreams. And there was this line that really caught my attention. That it said, in order to have happy dreams, you need to have a happy life, something along those lines. And I thought, wow, that is profound. And here's actually maybe a different way of saying that is, in order to have happy, pleasant dreams, your mind needs to be filled with peace, with ease, with safety that loving kindness can really provide. All right, number four. People will love you. That's a nice one. People will love you. Oh, but wait, it's about to get better. The devas, celestial beings, angels in Buddhist cosmology, and animals will love you. That's a nice one. But still, it gets even better. Number six, devas will protect you. Ah, that's nice too. Okay, so number seven, I like the sound of this one, but I don't recommend you actually test this one at home. External dangers such as poisons, weapons, and fire will not harm you. So, let's not test this one, but we'll just take it. Your face will be radiant. Your mind will be serene. And these make sense, of course. This number 10 and 11, I don't know. I haven't had experience with yet, but I trust. Number 10, you will die unconfused. That would be a blessing. Number 11, you will be reborn in happy realms. So conventional benefits. So similar to the conventional benefits here from Anguttara Nikaya, from this particular sutta, there's also plenty of benefits, conventional benefits in various studies. As you all know, the past decade, a little over the past decade, there's been so much interest in running research studies on loving kindness meditation, on compassion meditation. So I'll also mention a few conventional benefits of metta. So there are studies about how practicing metta increases positive emotion and it decreases negative emotion. Studies, for example, by Barbara Friedrichsen and colleagues, with 7 weeks of loving kindness meditation, like a class, a weekly class, they showed increased love, joy, contentment, gratitude, hope, interest, amusement, and awe. And also increase in purpose in life, increased social support, and decreased illness symptoms, suggesting that kindness makes you happy and happiness makes you kind. So there is a virtuous circle, much better than a vicious cycle, a virtuous cycle. Also, other studies have suggested that our immune response to stress is improved. Another study with 6 weeks of compassion meditation, they did the tier social stress test, and they noticed that the blood cortisol level for those who had practiced compassion meditation, actually the cortisol level stayed pretty moderate compared to those who hadn't. Basically, when we feel really stressed, our cortisol levels increase and all kinds of challenging events, physiological events happen in our body. So just as the Buddha was teaching the monks, offered this teaching as a protection for fear, protection for challenge, it shows that, yes, indeed, this practice supports us. It protects us from stress that is induced in our environment, and physiologically, actually, we get protection, which is pretty cool. I think it's pretty wild to see these correlations. There are physiological changes, and also the sense of social connection that this practice, even with a small dose, this was a very interesting study that loving kindness practiced in a single dose session, which lasted less than 10 minutes. Okay, you guys are doing a lot more than this. It increased the feelings of social connection, So especially in this time of social isolation, practicing loving kindness can really, even if you're not able to see others, people you want to see, but you're not able to see, this practice brings about a sense of connection, social connection. you feel socially connected. You feel connected to them because guess what? You are connected to them in your mind, in your heart. You're wishing them well. You see them wishing you well. So there is a sense of connection. And again, we know from plenty of studies by athletes, et cetera, when you imagine our imagination, many things that you imagine are as powerful as actually doing them. Studies showing that if you imagine exercising, if you imagine doing reps, actually your muscles do get some percentage stronger. The muscles, I mean, it's profound. So if you're imagining, so if you're cultivating, if you're wishing well and seeing others wishing you well, it is, quote unquote, strengthening the muscle, the loving muscle of your heart. It's just, it's doing that. There's no other way that it wouldn't. And just a couple more studies I'll talk about. One is this practice reduces self-criticism, which also with higher self-criticism, higher self-judgment, there tends to be more depressive symptoms, which makes sense, right? If you're always judging yourself, chastising yourself, or you're terrible, you're awful, you're a loser, etc. Ouch, ouch, ouch. It's understandable that one would get depressed. And this practice, it's shown that self-criticism gets attenuated and depressive symptoms decrease. And the results were maintained 3 months after the research study, and some, and also more studies with pain, with migraines was one study. Another study was with chronic pain, chronic lower back pain. And not only did loving kindness decrease the pain that comes with anger and the psychological distress of difficulty. So as we know here, the two arrows, right? When we have pain, when we have challenges, one is the arrow of the pain itself. And then the second arrow is what we add, being angry that we're in pain. Why me? This will never end. It will increase. I'll be crippled. Why me? Why me? Anger at the world, anger at ourselves. So for both arrows, again, we know this, that both arrows get softened, get a little blunted or go away or get attenuated, especially the second arrow. But even the first arrow, it doesn't, even our relationship to pain itself changes. So surprise, surprise, the study found what are us participants know already. And yet it's good to hear this. Yes, yes. So many ways we can support ourselves. So aside from these pre-conventional or mundane benefits, which by the way, to say, hey, if that's all there was, sign me up, right? If that all there was as benefits of metta, to just have more safety and ease and more ease in the body, ease in the mind, social connection, feeling loved, loving, like, okay, maybe we're done. I don't even have to talk about the post-conventional. I think this is enough. So I in no way do I want to downplay. I think these benefits are plenty, are wonderful, are nourishing for our life, for ourselves, for our loved ones, the way we show up in the world. Let's take a pause with these benefits and see for yourself. I want to invite you in a moment of reflection. The ones I mentioned, so many benefits. Maybe choose one. There are more come up, one, two, or three, that really speaks to you. And invite yourself to make a connection And if you could take a pill and that would be available to you, like, oh, here it is. Here is a quote unquote pill without any side effects. Without any side effects. What would it be? Which one? So many to choose from. Such abundance of benefits. Yeah. So, I'll reveal to you that as I ask that question for myself, again, it's hard to choose. So many come up. And yet, having had a chronic illness myself and so much physical pain and physical challenges, this gift of yes, ease with physical challenges, with pain, is such a gift, is such a profound gift in the way that one can go through life. So I highlight that one for myself. So now there are, as we turn perhaps a little bit to the post-conventional benefits a bit, so I brought in earlier the sense of who do we want to be in this world? How do we want to show up? There's a sense of not just benefits we can get, but what can we give? What can we give to the world? Which can, again, really become clarified if we imagine ourselves in our deathbed. And Jack Kornfield writes it beautifully in his book, A Path with Heart. He says, in the stress and complexity of our lives, we may forget our deepest intentions. But when people come to the end of their life and look back, the question that they most often ask are not usually how much is in my bank account, or how many books did I write, or what did I build, or the like. You have the privilege of being with a person who's aware at the time of his or her or their death. You find the questions such a person asks are very simple. Did I love well? Did I live fully? Did I learn to let go? Can we open up to our fuller potential, our fullest potential as human beings? And also another way that, as we bring death, which is one way that everything can fall away, all that's extra, all that's unnecessary can drop away. And another set of practices that actually show us everything falling away are practices, liberative practices, wisdom practices, liberative practices, where our hearts, our minds, we touch into the impermanence, we touch into unsatisfactoriness and into not self, into the emptiness, really emptiness, which covers all three those marks of existence. So when emptiness arises, when there's a sense of emptiness, what shines through instead of this bleak nothingness, nihilistic nothingness, in the sense of emptiness, when everything falls away, what feels as many have reported, what really shines through is love, compassion. So emptiness is known as the womb, as the birthplace of love and compassion, because that's really what matters. That's what really permeates. Anita Murjani, who wrote the book Dying to Be Me, My Journey from Cancer to Near Death to True Healing, a remarkable, remarkable human being. And she writes about, so she had stage 4 metastatic cancer, and basically she was in the hospital for a while, she dies, she flatlines, and she has a profound near-death experience. And when she is revived, when she comes back, and miraculously she recovers from all her tumors. It's an interesting study. Anyway, whether one believes what happened, what didn't, without reifying or believing, from her state of near-death experience, the experiences that she had, there's a quote that I love reading and feeling into, because it really shares the sense of this unconditional love, this post-conventional, this of love as the fabric of the universe. So she writes, in my near-death experience state, in my NDE state, I realized that the entire universe is composed of unconditional love, and I am an expression of this. Every atom, molecule, quark, and tetraquark is made of love. I can be nothing else because this is my essence and the nature of the entire universe. Even things that seem negative are all part of the infinite, unconditional spectrum of love. And then, in a different part of the book, she says, and then I was overwhelmed by the realization that God isn't a being, but a state of being. And I was now that state of being. So many traditions, many mystics, many people who have had unconventional near-death experiences, etc., have equated sense of the divine, the sacred, God, grace, whatever word works for you. For some, these words work, for some don't, but the sense of what is bigger than me, what is bigger than me, what is bigger than me that I am a part of. They equate that with love, that I am part of love and love is me. I serve love. So, by practicing metta, step by step by step, for this body, for this mind, for this self, for these others, it's actually our practice in this conventional way is actually held in a much bigger container. It's a much bigger space of tapping into, borrowing from Sayadaw Ujjagara's language, this universal, this universality of love. Step by step by step. And how do we get there? Perhaps, as somebody was asking this morning, well, we quote unquote, we're already there. It's already here. we open our hearts, we open our awareness, our minds to this universality of love everywhere, that love is me and I am part of love and I serve love, and love in some ways is serving me. It's one and the same. Language fails. How do I quote unquote get there or open up? Step by step by step by step. Every moment practicing, may I be safe, may I be happy, feeling love for this body, for others, cultivating step by step by step. As it is said, waking up, awakening, our hearts opening up, our minds opening up, waking up, nibbana, awakening is an accident. And practicing makes you more accident prone. So our hearts and minds opening up to this sense of universal love is an accident. And practicing metta step by step makes you more accident prone. And in fact, it is building. It is building in so many ways. Also the traditional, the conventional benefits supporting us. And our relationship to our life changes, our relationship to how we show up, who we are, changes. Vinnie Ferraro, a friend, puts it in this way. Just see if you can approach every moment with kindness. Know what that does? That allows you to live in a kind world. That allows you to live in a kind world. So when you are approaching every moment with kindness, it feels like the world is kind. It feels like the world is kind. So this connection to between the pre-conventional to the post-conventional is really how your attitude, your practice, how the way you relate, you show up, you see the world changes little by little by little. And I was using how to get there or get in quotes because there's nothing to get. There's nothing to really get. It's how it's about letting go. It's about letting go of. It reminds me, I forget who it was, a senior monk who was giving a talk at some point, and they started their talk by making the declaration that, you know, I've been a monk for decades and I haven't got anything. I haven't got anything. And people were, oh no, is he going to disrobe? He says he hasn't got anything. It's been decades. He's been a monk. I said, well, I haven't got anything, but I've let go of so much. I've let go of hatred and this and that. I forget what he said, but you know, we can imagine so many things you can let go of. Let go of contractions and reactivity and comparing mind and judgmental mind and letting go, letting go, letting go of ill will, letting go of all this stuff, letting go, lightening up, letting go, letting go. And Byron Katie also puts it in an interesting way. She says, I'm a lover of what is, not because I'm a spiritual person, but because it hurts when I argue with reality. So that's another way to see it, that again, it hurts when we argue with reality, when we fight with reality. So what if we actually become a lover of what is? Loving what is, shifting our reality, shifting our relationship through this practice. So relationally and and also non-relational in the way of this practice, being, abiding in. So just to mention, so we do this practice can be done in the way of relational practice, as you turn to your body with kindness, with care, to yourself with kindness and care, to others, to your dear beings, to the neutral person, to someone you have challenges with, to all beings, all these concentric circles that we're going to go through relationally. Yes. So that's one way we can practice metta. Another way is relationally with reality, with what comes up. Kindness. So basically, how metta, kindness, can imbue your awareness, which in a way is also part of it's relational, because it's relation to something. So actually, let me put it this way. So relationally, awareness and metta, wisdom and metta, can be intertwined, and it could be in relationship to other beings as we conventionally practice it. It could be ourselves, our bodies, could be relation to events or reality, for example. And it could also be experienced as a sense of abiding in metta, a sense of radiating, which can arise. So I want to say a little more about the how. So the practice of metta is about, not about fabrication. We're not trying to create by force something that isn't there. As Bhante was saying this morning, we are lighting a fire, and in fact, you know, there are these little kindlings, and the fire is kind of maybe blowing on it. We all know how to love. We all know how to be kind. It's part of our human nature. We all know. We're just blowing a little, kind of encouraging it to grow, the fire to grow. Oh, yes. So it's a cultivation practice. We're cultivating. We're not forcing. And we're tapping into the feelings of warmth and care and goodwill that they're already there, and we're expanding them in widening circles of self, benefactor, friend, neutral person, someone we're having challenges with, and all beings. And we can practice formally with the phrases, tapping into the feelings, sensations. And can also practice informally. And also to say, the formal practice can also be, metta practice can also be a samatha, a concentration practice leading to absorption, where insight, where awareness, where sati and metta deepen together, a sense of stability of the mind arises. And to also say that this practice of metta is thought to be a purification practice. So purification, many challenging emotions may come up that you didn't expect him to. You showed up on a metta retreat to cultivate kindness, darn it, and here this anger, this, you know, this friend you had a fight with 20 years ago and you haven't thought about it in 20 years, and now it's coming up and now you're sitting in anger. It's okay. It does come up. It's a purification practice. Whatever needs to come up and be processed, work through and lived through, or rather, let me say, moved through you, will come up So don't feel like you've made a mistake or you've taken a left turn and gosh, it wasn't supposed to happen. No, this is exactly what was supposed to happen. Whatever comes up on your retreat is exactly what's supposed to happen for you, including purifications, including challenging emotions, sadness, sorrow, anger, whatever versions of it might be, and turning to it all with metta, with kindness, with care, instead of go away, you're not supposed to be here. No conflict with reality. On the other hand, if now you're expecting a big cathartic experience and nothing is happening, you're just practicing metta for the body, yourself, or others, maybe with phrases, okay, may you be safe, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you have ease, okay, are we done yet? And nothing is happening. Okay, I want some cathartic experience. Now when we're together in physical retreats, there would be a lot of tears at times in the hall when people, you know, sadness, purification would happen. And sometimes some yogis would experience purification envy. Well, why am I not having those experiences? So just to say, whatever is happening for you or not happening for you is exactly what needs to happen or not happen. And trust that you're planting seeds one by one by one by one. You're planting seeds. And I've seen plenty of retreatants practicing metta, giving themselves to metta and being transformed, really being transformed above and beyond their expectations, even though it seemed like nothing was happening for a long time. I can attest that for me, this has been a profound shifting and changing experience. So in closing, I want to offer an acronym, an invitation for practice. So I want to invite you to practice metta with grace, GRACE. Well, both with grace and G standing for gentleness. Gentleness, gentle with yourself, whatever comes up, gentle, be kind, be gentle. So G is overloaded. This both stands for gentleness and also for gradual cultivation. It doesn't happen overnight. Hang in there, one moment at a time. How to get to Carnegie Hall? Which direction? Practice. Bad joke. But practice, really. Gentle cultivation. So G for both gentleness and gradual cultivation. R, also stands for two different things. One is receive metta. Receiving is as important as giving metta to others. In fact, it might even be more important to fill your own cup, because when you fill your own cup, then it naturally overflows and beams, fills the cup of others. But if you're trying to give metta to others when your own cup is empty, it can feel needy. Oh, I'm going to love you so that you love me back, because I need love. Well, okay, let's turn my love to myself first. Fill my own cup. Feeling empowered, supported, sitting gracefully like a Buddha. And, oh, wow, may you be happy. We're not in good terms today, but it's okay. I don't need you to like me. I still love you. May you be happy. So receive, R for receive, also for relax. Let your body be soft. Let your body be relaxed. If your body is tight and your forehead is tight, it's a sign that you're trying too hard. Relax, relax. A, grace, A. A for arrive every moment a new arrival. If your mind was daydreaming the last 44 minutes, it's okay. Arrive in this moment, in the 45th minute of the practice. It's okay. It's all right. Arrive this moment. Arrive again and again. Arrive in this moment. Can A can also stand for allow or accept. Acceptance is love, letting things be instead of fighting them, instead of pushing them away. Allowing them to be is an expression of love. C stands for continuity. Continuity as much as possible. Formal practice, informal practice, when you're washing the dishes, when you're writing emails, when you go out for your doctor's appointment. Continuity of practice. So many different shapes and forms. And last, but the most important, is E, embodiment. This practice is not heady. As Bhante and I keep emphasizing, it's not in your head. It's embodied, feeling it in your body, feeling it in the body, feeling the care. May I be safe? Feeling the care, feeling embodied, your breath embodied, your practice embodied. So embodiment, if you stop feeling your body at any point in this week, come back to the body. Feel the sensations of the body. Be embodied. So again, G for gentleness and gradual cultivation. R to receive, metta, and relax your body. A to arrive. Arrive every moment. And A for allow, accept. Acceptance, allowing is love. C for continuity, and E for embodiment. So, may we all practice metta. May we all learn to love. May we all learn to love well as we possibly can. With grace. Thank you for your kind attention. And let's just sit together in silence for a moment or two and let all the words settle. Thank you. So we have a walking period. Then we have a dinner break. And we have a sit at 7:30 with an evening reflection. Send you off to bed for those who can come to that given your time zone. So enjoy your walk.